Well, thank you to the Toms family. We appreciate the music. I think we appreciate the words. I love the phrase out of that says, salvation flows. I think that links directly into our sermonette about the promise of salvation. Does flow from God. And I wanted to talk about destiny today. And I think it all kind of goes nicely together. So if you'll turn over with me to Psalm 23 in verse 20, in verse 6, Psalm 23, verse 6, it says in the very end of the verse, it says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. How is it that that happens? How do we talk about salvation flowing? How do we get to the house of the Lord? It seems to me that since the Feast of Tabernacles, there have been a rapid succession of happenings, whether they be good, bad, or indifferent. And so I wanted to pause today as these things kind of came upon me, and I thought I would bring a few life lessons that I've seen since the feast, which come from attending two funerals, visiting with the sick man at the feast, and the recent fires. Kind of taken off the theme of two weddings and a funeral. Did you get it? No, I'm sorry, Mr. Garnett. I have to explain my jokes. They get yours, so it's okay. Anyway, and I think Psalm 23 epitomizes this with respect to the destiny. How do we get to the house of the Lord? And my first lesson today is with respect to, well, I'll have 4 points. I'll tell you what they are, but it kind of gives my story away if I tell you what they are, but I'll give it to you. Anyway, never miss a funeral. The second one is living will make God personal to you. The third lesson is that if we see God by getting outside, not just in the world, but getting outside ourselves. And the fourth is seeing life's lessons do connect us to destiny. So as I begin today, I had an occasion, a co-worker of ours in the office, his father-in-law had died, and so they were going to have the memorial service. So several weeks ago, they had the memorial service on a Sabbath, and it was down in Escondido, so I wasn't here. Valerie was already gone to Tucson to be with her sister for Thanksgiving. And so I had to make the trek 2.5 hours down to Escondido. And so as I was going in, I was thinking about various things and going to be respectful and offer support. And as I listened to this story about this gentleman who died, it was a rather remarkable story, because here's a gentleman who had, at the age of 2, coming from a Slovak family back in Ohio, had crawled out into the field as a 2-year-old to see his father. But his father didn't know he was in the field, and his father clipped him with the combine at the age of 2, and he lost a leg. And his father races him to the hospital 30 miles away, almost losing this 2-year-old child. And they say in the operation that day, they laid his father on one gurney and the child on the other, and his father lay there as they amputated his son's leg, giving blood all the time to his son. A very touching story. But more than that is, as he grew up in life, he never remembered the accident, of course. And so throughout time went on, he worked and worked. He had 5 sisters, so he still had to work on the farm. But yet, because of his disability, he was able to go to college free. It changed his destiny. And his children say that they never heard him once complain about not having a leg. They said they did everything. They hiked mountains. They went across streams. In fact, every time they'd go across a stream, he'd take off his wooden leg and throw it across to his brother-in-law because he didn't want to get warped. Had a great sense of humor, a great, incredible. But he would remark to his children, my destiny was changed because of that accident. Because had he not had that, his father would have never let him leave the farm. Their family's destiny was making good and living on this farm. But here is, you know, so to speak, a one-legged farmer who couldn't do as much. And so he became a chemical engineer, moved across the country many times, working on water projects, which was his fascination. His son said, my father never shirked responsibility of any size or kind. He recalls how his father would be away at school, studying at college, and he would come home, and he said his worst chore was cleaning out the stalls of the cow barn. And there would be the pile waiting. What's interesting to that to me is that his father knew that to be making him a man is that he had to continue the responsibilities he was able to. One leg and all, he'd still clean out the stalls, doing his part, growing up, becoming strong, and never seeking to just do his own way. My coworker read, as he turned and talked about his father-in-law, he turned to Ecclesiastes 7:2. In Ecclesiastes 7:2, it says, "Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men." And my coworker made the comment that in the final days of his father-in-law's life, they would go down on the weekends, and his wife would take his mother-in-law shopping, and he would sit with his father-in-law, and they would begin to have little discussions, and sometimes he wasn't as lucid as he could be, but other times they had great conversations. And he was making the point that only on the day of mourning do you get to rehearse what life meant to people. Why life? Why a destiny? Why a future? You see, as I was bringing up this verse, I was commenting to Mr. Weber. He asked what I was going to talk about, and I mentioned Ecclesiastes 7:2, and he goes, "Oh, 25 years ago, I heard so-and-so give a message. The Marie Robertson," and some of you will remember the Robertsons. He says, "I was at her funeral, and the minister read Ecclesiastes 7:2. Mr. Weber says, "Ever since then, I try to read it or weave it into any service, because it means so much. Because we somehow, when we pause on those days, we just remember the nub, what it takes to reap a destiny, whether it be not complaining, always never shirking from your responsibilities, loving your family, whatever those things are, on that day, you get to take home the gold." I mentioned it to Mr. Garnett the other day on the phone, and he goes, "Oh, yes." He goes, "Mayor Giuliani," he says, "remember his phrase after 9/11, he says, never miss a funeral." Mr. Giuliani took the respect and the time to offer the respect to everyone after 9/11. Why do we get together at church? You know, look, we can listen to a sermon. We can listen to them by the plethora, right, on the internet. We can go to our app. We can listen to them right now. We listen to them as we go down the street all the time. But we come together because sometimes when we come together, we see each other's faces. We remember the point. We remember what it takes, perhaps the diligence that it takes, the strength, the compassion to live life. Ecclesiastes 7:2, "Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men." I drove 5 hours that day. I'll never forget Ecclesiastes 7:2. Sometimes you have to go the distance to learn the lesson, to remember the lesson, to make it go deep into your heart. How to have and see a destiny? How do we get connected to God? Sometimes it takes a little time. My second point is living will make God personal. How do we build an awareness of destiny? I mean, for everyday living. How is that possible? Young and old alike, our attempt at services with our messages, short or longer, is to how to help you own God, right? How to help you see that Psalm 23, verse 6, is worth giving up all for. Surely it says, "Goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." How's that possible? What's it take in our hearts and our minds to make that connection? Young people, how do we say it a different way? Some days, maybe you don't get it, and other days you do. And maybe it takes coming and coming until finally it sinks in the right way. But another lesson from that memorial service that day is that the chaplain who was giving the message, he was a chaplain, a hospice chaplain, and I found it interesting, and he had very few words because he let the son and the son-in-law offer their eulogy. And then he said, you know, on our program today is Psalm 23 written. He says, may I offer a reflection? He says, do you notice how in verses 1 and 2 of Psalm 23, there is one view of God presented? It is, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And the chaplain paused and said, but as we've heard about the lesson of this man today, he says, there comes a place when God not becomes the third person, that God comes to you in the first person. And thus we read in verse 4, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. There comes a place and a time when God must become personal to us. The God we can talk about in the third person all we want, but there are days and times, the times I submit to you that we live in now, when God must become extremely personal. God in the third person must give way to God in the first person. And that takes the lesson from a funeral, living day by day, month by month, year by year. And then it all starts to perhaps make sense. The challenges, I think, to seeing God, my friends, I think is our screen-filled world. I own 3 screens, you know, the one that's always on my belt, the iPad that's right here, the computer that's right here. I live all day long, all night long. I prepare the sermon. I mean, you know, I put all the notes in this lovely little boxes, etc. I did that on a screen, you know what I mean? If I did it in my handwriting, I'd be going like this every time. Well, what was that word? That's what people in the office tell me. Don't write it to me, type it to me. But we live in a screen-filled world, right? We all have to, you know, we all have Hulu, we have Netflix, we have the latest, you know, video games, etc. And they occupy our time. I find many of them enjoyable. You know, Free Cell Solitaire, that Debbie Barr put me on 2 years ago, by the way, I find a nice pastime every few minutes, every once in a while. It's nice. But they do, we have to admit, all the screens tend to help us not see God as clearly, perhaps as we should. Ecclesiastes 7:2, in the last part of the verse that I didn't read, it says, better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. You and I are the living. Will we take life's lessons to heart? The challenges, the mountaintops, the valleys. Sometimes we have to put the screen aside to let it all sink in. Sometimes we have to drive hours to a certain memorial service and just let it all settle down. And those are wonderful times. Are we living? Are we taking it to heart? That's the scripture. That's the question, I think it says. I would offer on my third point today, the way to see God comes to us by way of another memorial service. You see, primed with the first experience, I was kind of eager, I would say. 3 days later, I had to drive north to the memorial service for Mr. George Anderson. And so I was kind of piqued all the way up. I'm thinking, well, what lesson am I going to learn today? What scripture? What's concept? What thing is just going to really settle in? And so this was a little shorter drive. You know, it's only an hour and a half north up to the Veterans National Cemetery and outside of, I don't know why they say it's outside of Bakersfield. It's only outside of Bakersfield if you live outside of Bakersfield. For those of us south, it seems to be way east of Bakersfield. But we went up, and so I was kind of interested to think about these lessons. And the lesson I think I learned that day is the way to see God comes from the way in which Mr. Bates expressed who Mr. Anderson was. You see, it was a military service in National Cemetery. There's only 30 minutes for the service. And the armed services say that they get this much of the service, and so the minister in any eulogy gets 10 minutes. So out of the 30 minutes, there's only 10 minutes. And I thought Mr. Bates did an exceptional job. He wrote it out and presented it quite succinctly in three and a half minutes of who Mr. Anderson was. And who he was at his core was that Mr. Anderson said, get out and see the natural world, because that is where he could see God. Mr. Bates recounted how he and a bunch of teenagers were up on a mountainside one night and it was raining. They hadn't really got the tents pitched yet, and it's all rainy out there, and he's not sure they could get a fire started. And along comes a man with a firebrand. Helps him light all this almost wet material into a fire. And the man goes away. Mr. Anderson contended till the day he died that that was an angel. Coming out of the night with a firebrand in the middle of the rain to help a middle-aged man help some young people out in the nature. See, he chose to see God. Get outside. Mr. Anderson lived a life that took from, I think he understood Psalm 23. You see, God went from being a pronoun to being he, to being you in his life. For him, Mr. Anderson, it was to me, God, you are with me in verse 4 of Psalm 23. Your rod, your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. You, the God of all, the God who we often can see more clearly without the screens around us, with the wind and the trees and the leaves blowing, God can become quite personal. Dr. Toms that day only had a few minutes to offer a few scripture. And I think he wisely chose 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 13 through 18. And he read it to those of faith and those of mourning that day. It was succinct. If you only had one scripture to read, what would it be? He read it, delivered it well. I thought he made the distinct point that God had become our God through the life of George Anderson. Get out, see the world. Also felt another lesson of the day was brevity can sometimes be most powerful. They summed up a man's life, his faith, energy, and strength in under 10 minutes. Winston Churchill often said, the most difficult of topics can usually be noodled down to their very essence inside of 20 minutes. And yet often we pontificate for hours on end about this point and that point when we just haven't focused our minds and hearts enough to say, well, perhaps that's enough, and now we have to go away and figure out what to do. So on that day, I drove 3 hours for the lesson of brevity and the lesson to get outside. On that day, I think I saw a glimpse of what living looked like for that man that linked him to Psalm 23, verse 6. We all are faced with this question. How do I get to dwell in the house of the Lord forever? How do we get there? How? Well, that's an interesting thing. And I think we have a few challenges in our world around us. And that's one of the things I've noticed since the feast. If you'll go over with me to Isaiah, we see a lot of noise. We see a lot of the reality of what living without law and fear of God looks like. Isaiah chapter 5. Isaiah 5. To understand this lesson, we need to understand what's going on around us. Isaiah 5, verse 11, it says, "Woe to those who rise early in the morning, that they may follow intoxicating drink, who continue until night, till wine inflames them. The harp and the strings, the tambourine and flute, and the wine are in their feasts, but they do not regard the work of the Lord, nor consider the operation of his hands." The operation of God's hands is to give you and I dwelling with him forever. That's the message of church. That's the message of the Bible. That's the message of the promise before the ages began, that you and I get to dwell with God forever. But how is really important. And we see a lot of people in leadership that don't understand squat about how. They have thumbed their noses at God. Let's turn over to Romans. We would be remiss if we did not get the lesson of what's going on around us, and may it move us, may it make us confident, may it make us perhaps intransient in what we should do and believe and how we should treat each other. Notice it says in Romans chapter 1, verse 20, it says, "For since the creation of the world, his, God's, invisible attributes are clearly seen." That's Mr. Anderson's lesson. Get out and touch the world. "Being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so they are without excuse." The Apostle Paul's inspired to write, "Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, did not understand his eternal promise since the ages began. Nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened." In contrast, my friends, the daily news is filled with gross self-fulfillment. Gross self-fulfillment will not lead us to the destiny that God has in mind. Not seeing God leads to the following in verse 24. "Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lust of their hearts." Verse 26. "For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions." I can't even read in public company the rest of the verse. Verse 28, "Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting," that do not fit the purpose of the Creator's hands to help us dwell with him forever. Verse 32, I won't read the other portions of this. It says, "Who knowing the righteousness judgment of God, that those who practice such things are not deserving of resigning, are not deserving of writing a book and making millions of dollars off of it. They're deserving of death." The plain and simple truth of the words of God is people who only participate in the self-fulfillment and thumb their nose at the very knowledge and presence of God will not dwell in the house of the Lord forever. It's a sobering reminder. The thinking of the self does not lead to destiny. The real living is respecting God, women, and men, holding each in the highest esteem because of him who created them. We would be remiss if we did not read Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let us esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look not only to his own interest, but also through the interest of others. Let this mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus." This is how we get to the destiny of dwelling with God, living forever. Attributes that lead to destiny are respect, care and kindness. Always. Not sometimes. Not when it's convenient. Not when we don't want to do it our way. The lesson is that living without God is to live without the boundaries necessary to see clearly the destiny that God has in store. That's the lesson I've seen in the recent weeks. And sadly so. May we take it to heart. May it change who and what we are always. May it make us, as men, better protectors. May it make our antennas stronger. May we be more bold when boldness is due. That brings me to another bonus lesson. I got three bonus lessons for you today. The bonus lesson comes from a man at the feast in Greece. He and his family reside up north. And although not a church member, he and his wife came to Europe and then came on down to the feast. And he's had some challenges with cancer and some other issues. And before the feast, it had a few anomalies, and they'd went to the doctor, and the doctor said no, things would be okay. But as they went on the trip, and before they even got down to Greece for the feast, had some numbness in his extremities, and he's kind of, you know, how is this all going? And it's kind of bizarre. And so his wife, she sees all this going, says, well, you know, maybe we should go home. His reply was, we came to the feast because it's important to you, and so we'll stay. Ephesians 5:25 is my bonus lesson. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. The bonus lesson from the feast from a sick man. Be a good husband. Strong. Know when to be strong, when to be humble. That day, I marveled. A man who doesn't walk the halls of our church displayed agape love and what it was to be a good husband. What a great lesson. What a great lesson. The other lesson comes from our dear friend out in Glendora. So I was talking to him on the phone yesterday as he's confined to his bed. Said, make sure you share dinner with your family tonight. Time around the table is so precious. And share a good joke, he said. Mr. Vieira, you see, it means so much more when you know that it's what he cannot do. He didn't tell me because I was remiss. He told me out of love, care, compassion. And that's what we do on funeral days, is we remind each other what matters most to reach destiny. And so then I think I'd be remiss if there weren't a lesson in here from the fires. My lesson, I think, is that we should be prepared. I know that, Susie and Steve, they called me 5:18. Thankfully, there's clocks and phones, you know. And they had seen the fire. And like 30 seconds after, my neighbor's knocking on the door, Joe, you know. And so everybody's awake up in Somar. But I know Joseph's out in Ventura Fire County. I'm not even sure there's a county left out there, is there, Joseph? It's marginal. I know Kate, Colleen, and Maria are up. One's Sumberland, one is Ventura, and one is Santa Barbara. We're looking. But it's interesting to me, you know, some time ago we created a list and we keep it on the kitchen cabinet in the door. And it's like, okay, Valerie takes this, Laurel takes this, I take this. Don't forget the medication. It only got 6 or 7 items on it. But it helps, you know, when you're saying, well, what do I do? And the other one was, my wife did this great thing recently because she thought the suitcases were going to get dirty in the garage, so she bought plastic bins. So we had the suitcases in the plastic bins. Well, when you take out the suitcases and put clothes in them, now you've got the empty plastic bin. And what do you get to put in the bin? Anything you want to put in the bin, right? So those pictures, momentums, papers, and all that stuff that you have on the list easily go in there, and then you're done. And then I look around and I went, what's all the rest of this stuff if this is the only stuff we value? Like, that was a lesson in itself, I think. It's cute. But I know Susie and Steve were just, less than 200 feet away from the one set of flames, and God does deliver. And I think Psalm 107, verse 2, is something that we would say. Psalm 107, verse 2. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. In verse 1, for his mercy endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so. We've been spared. You know, Wednesday, I came and drove home again, and we had unpacked the night before. And so Valerie said, oh, no, I think there's more threat. And as Fritz was on TV and explaining why this was, you know, the perfect red storm of threat, he showed all of Southern California and how it was all threat. He said, you know, we live in microclimates. He says, and usually we don't have the moisture level, the winds, et cetera, in all the same areas the same way. And he says, but that's not true this time. He says, it's all a problem. It's all red. It's all a threat. Everybody's got this giant lack of moisture, et cetera. And of course, you know, for the 2 or 3 days before that, we had 74, 75 mile an hour gusts. I'm standing there talking to my neighbor getting blown back. And so, you know, Wednesday night, we were supposed to have another night of those. And they were concerned that the fire would come back over the mountain. I got up, as we went to bed, I thought, well, where's the wind? I got up in the middle of the night, it was still. Maybe the winds were aloft, but on the ground, they were not. I choose to say that God made it blow elsewhere. You see, we have a choice. Do we say that by my invisible attributes I clearly seen? Do we as the redeemed say that nature did it or God did it? God's the moving force. We as people of faith say that God is the moving force that brings us to destiny, that God is the moving force that brings us. Thank God I have a home. Thank God those of you who were near a fire did not lose yours. Thank God we were able to come to church today. Thank God that we're healthy enough to recognize that God is great. You see, we must choose to see God. Psalm 23, verse 4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod, your staff, they comfort me. They nudge me along the way. They keep me close. Philip Keller, in his wonderful book, Psalm 23, which is always neat to pull off the shelf, he makes a comment here. He says, from a shepherd's point of view, the statement remarks halfway through the Psalm 23. It is though up to this point the sheep has been boasting to its unfortunate neighbor across the fence about the excellent care it received from his owner on the home ranch throughout the winter and spring. And now it turns to address the shepherd directly. The personal pronouns, as I mentioned, I and you, enter the conversation. It becomes a most intimate discourse of deep affection. This is natural. And then I skip over page 83. He says, in the Christian life, we often speak of wanting to move on to higher ground, how we long to live above the lowlands of life. We want to get beyond the common crowd to enter a more intimate walk with God, we say. We speak of mountaintop experiences, and we envy those who have ascended the heights and entered into the most sublime sort of life. Often we get an erroneous idea about how this takes place. It is though we imagined we could be airlifted onto higher ground. However, on the rough trail of life, we do not get airlifted. We must go through the valley. And Mr. Keller goes on to say that the only way to the top is up through the valley. his second point. Along the way, there's plenty of good water from he who is the source of all life. And three, it is where we gain the richest feed, because God the shepherd knows what we need as we move along through the valleys. And so as we read, you prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness, surely mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The lessons I'd like to leave today are never miss a funeral. Living will make God personal. See God, get out and touch the world. Get out of yourself. And four, see life's lessons to connect to destiny. Our destiny, the flow to eternity. Our destiny is to live in the house of the Lord forever. And the final lesson was be brief as possible.